Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
At Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys get a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast, everyone. This is Dr. Jason Staples, your host. Got a lot to catch up on. Haven't done anything since the Ole Miss game in this space, but lots to catch up on. Also going to be previewing the game against Louisville this weekend. But first and foremost, just talking about what we've seen through those first two games. I wasn't really going to spend much time on the Charleston Southern game. Not much to have learned from that. Other than not having Derwin James moving forward for a little while, which we'll talk about in a moment. But before we talk about Derwin, I have exclusive audio of the message that Jimbo Fisher sent out to the rest of the teams on the Florida State schedule and also possible playoff opponents that Florida State may face at the end of the year after the Ole Miss game. And here it is.
Now I have a machine gun.
Yes, indeed, everybody. Florida State, once again, has a quarterback. Jimbo Fisher, the quarterback whisperer, has once again managed to first recruit and then develop a quarterback who looks like he's able to play on a very, very high level. If you get anything like what we saw in the second half against Ole Miss through the rest of this season, and really the last three quarters against Ole Miss, not just the second half. If you get anything like that over the course of the rest of the year, this is going to be a very, very difficult Florida State team to beat. And of course, that once again shows that the people who are saying in the offseason that, well, you know, Florida State, you know, Jimbo needs a Jameis Winston in order to succeed with that offense. It's just, you know, once again, you were having the same kind of criticisms of the Fisher offense after 2015, which was obviously, I mean, it was very much a painful year for those who are used to watching the Jameis-level quarterbacking at Florida State in 2014 and 2013. 2015, you know, was a massive step back and very frustrating for the fans, both because of a young offense and also just not having a Jameis-level quarterback behind, you know, under center. And there are not many Jameis-level quarterbacks, obviously. But this idea that, well, you know, for Fisher to succeed, he needs a Jameis-level quarterback under center, and that's just not going to happen again. Those guys don't come around. So, you know, just kind of prepare for average, you know, this sort of thing. I mean, I was seeing that sort of thing on social media at times, and it was ridiculous. And now, once again, Florida State has a quarterback. Jimbo Fisher, very comfortable. It's very clear he's very comfortable with this quarterback. And, you know, the thing is, Francois was better than I anticipated, than I expected, in especially the last three quarters against Ole Miss. If he plays anything like he did the last three quarters against Ole Miss, Florida State's going to be very, very difficult to beat this year. But the thing was, the question was never about Francois' physical talent. I mean, you talk about his arm strength, his ability to spin the football, fit it into tight spaces, to throw accurately from different body positions on the move and all that. I mean, he's high, high, high level talent there. The only real question you've got physically as far as Francois has been touch, sort of the ability to drop the football in and make some of those throws where you're not trying to throw it too hard and you have to kind of drop it for over one level and under another. You know, that's the real question. And I think he's developed on that since he got to Florida State. I mean, he's made some throws, particularly to Ryan Izzo, that have displayed improved touch from when he got to Florida State. But that was the only question physically that you'd ever have about Francois. I mean, the kid's got the goods in that regard. I mean, NFL teams will probably ding him a little bit for height, but beyond that, I mean, the kid's a physical wonder in terms of what he's what you build for the quarterback position. The real question was going to be how he would handle pressure, how he would handle adversity when it came down to it. And, you know, that was what I mentioned on the Ole Miss pregame podcast. Was the question was going to be how well was he going to handle it when things weren't going well? You know, he at times when Fisher has really gotten on him in practice and so on, he hasn't responded like Jameis, where Jameis could just sort of, you know, be insulated from all that and just handle whatever criticism you threw at him. Francois takes it a little bit more personally. But the one thing that I had been told is that he had some spice to him. And that's something I mentioned in the last podcast, that he's a kid that bristles, you know, and he bows up and is really, really hyper competitive. And I think you did see that against Ole Miss, and he handled the pressure, handled in, you know, especially in the first quarter while the offensive line was still settling in, handled getting, you know, getting beaten up pretty badly in that game, and stepped in and made some throws and earned the respect of his teammates, taking a beating that he did in that game and making throws under pressure and really bringing that team back. I mean, I am a little tired of hearing that 22-point comeback is the largest comeback in Florida State history, when that's actually not true. Don't forget the choke at Doak, which was 31-3, and Florida State came back to achieve the tie, which then became a win with the fifth quarter and the French Quarter, of course. So the biggest comeback is actually the choke at Doak, but the biggest comeback to win a game in school history in his first game. And, of course, that's really helpful for a young quarterback, that you can – he gets a major confidence boost moving forward. He's done it now. He knows under, you know, Monday night football conditions against – one of the better defensive fronts that you're going to see in the country. I think probably the best defensive front on Florida State's schedule, other than Clemson and maybe Florida. You know, he handled it. And now he's got the confidence so that when things don't go well, that's one of those things. Once you've done it, some of the question marks of whether or not you can handle it do fall by the wayside, even in your own head. So now, actually, it's interesting. The tough thing now is to make sure that Fisher can keep his attention on the details and his attention on continuing to do the things that he needs to do to improve, you know, some of the throws that he maybe has gotten away with through the first couple of weeks, making sure he doesn't do those without digging into him too much and affecting that confidence. So that's the trick from here. But, you know, major plus for Florida State moving forward, and Jimbo Fisher has handed the keys to the Ferrari. I mean, we talked about that in the offseason and also last year, that this 2016 offense, whoever was going to be the starter at the quarterback position was going to be getting handed the keys to a Ferrari. And that's basically what Francois got. And it turns out that the kid's a natural driver. Now, he hasn't been quite as good, I mean, in either game, as perhaps the fan base thinks. I mean, he's not playing at a Deshaun Watson level at this point, even though Watson, you know, first couple games has not statistically been great. Francois still has some areas where, you know, he's a little slow getting the ball out, and there were three or four throws against Charleston Southern that, you know, he threw into coverage, probably should have been picked. But then again, against Charleston Southern, he had more on his plate. Fisher loaded him up with more responsibility and against a defense that they hadn't really prepared for. I mean, Fisher said himself that was a test to see conceptually how much Francois was handling. And I think the kid really, again, came through well in that game. Now, there still needs to be some improvement in terms of timing and anticipation, particularly on things that are not play action, the basic drop back game. That's the one big area of growth remaining. He's got to get the ball out quicker and get it out a little bit more in rhythm. But aside from that, Florida State looks like they've got a quarterback, and a quarterback for a couple of years now, that can do everything that they want to do in this offense. I mean, he certainly can make all the throws. And while, again, you're not going to get Jameis Winston play out of DeAndre Francois, you can get really, really good quarterback play, NFL draft pick play, high draft pick play out of DeAndre Francois. And once again, you don't need a Jameis Winston to win in the Jimbo Fisher offense. You need somebody who can play at a high level, who can just make proper decisions and put the ball out with accuracy and in good timing. And I think that we've seen over the first couple of weeks now that DeAndre Francois can do all of that. Now, it's going to be much, much tougher against in a road situation against Louisville, and it's not going to get easier over the course of the year, at least through these first few games, where he's going to have teams that sort of get a little bit more of the book on him, and they discover what he likes to where he likes to look and what throws he likes to make. It's going to get a little trickier. And that Ole Miss secondary was not very good, especially once their best corner went out with an awful knee injury. That might have been a little bit of fool's gold in terms of how much space the Florida State wide receivers had to work with there. And of course, Charleston Southern can't cover anybody. So in that respect, it's not going to get easier. But the thing, there were a couple things that I was really encouraged by, particularly in that second half against Ole Miss, where it was the throws that he chose not to make. There's one in particular, I think it was in the third quarter, where he broke contain in the pocket, and you could see he squared his shoulders to throw, and then decided, you know what, I'm not going to. And when you saw the SkyCam view of that, you saw why it initially looked like, well, you know, if you're a strong arm quarterback, you might be able to force that. But it was really clear, like all of a sudden he just decided, you know what, no, live to see another play, and he took a no gain instead of making a risky throw down the field that, you know, he might be able to make, but it might have been an interception as well. And that's something he's been willing to throw the ball away. He's been more willing than Jameis Winston ever was to check the ball down, which, of course, when you've got Dalvin Cook in the backfield, is a really good decision. So those are all really encouraging things. Now, the offensive line has been a little underwhelming through the first couple weeks. That said, they haven't been a full unit just yet. R is going to be back this week. Wilson Bell's going to be back, although I wouldn't be surprised after seeing the Charleston Southern game if Landon Dickerson, who is still a little bit raw, still learning on his feet a little bit, still looks like a freshman in terms of, you know, picking certain things up. I wouldn't be surprised if after mid-year, sometime, Dickerson winds up being the starter at right guard. He's just that much more talented. That's a guy that could potentially be a 3.5-year starter on the offensive line if he lasts that long in college. That's a really, really, really good prospect. One of the best prospects Florida State's brought in quite a while on the offensive line. I mean, I think that's clear enough through the first couple games and watching him against Charleston Southern in particular. Leonard also, we've talked about in the past, you know, he struggled in pass pro, still leans, gets off balance. His technique is still raw. He's got to trust his feet. Overall, pretty good. And then the wide receivers have been better than most, although not have been better than most expected. They've basically been more or less what I've expected so far. Now, they still need more from the big wide receivers, and George Campbell being out as the, you know, probably best vertical threat from the big receivers just because of his speed. George Campbell being out for the remainder of the year doesn't help. But, you know, Auden Tate flashed against Charleston Southern, needs to get more time. Pig Harrison seems to be the number four receiver at this point on the roster. And you know, he's looked smooth and looked good. And I said this when he was recruited, he was the most talented recruit of that group, together with, he came in with Rudolph and with Ermin Lane. The most talented guy in terms of upside in that group was Pig Harrison. Rudolph was the most ready. He was the guy most prepared to play in college right away. Lane was, I think he might have been the highest rated, but I think he was the third most talented of the group. And you know, Harrison was the most talented, but the least ready. So Lane was kind of in the middle there. And then you got Keith Gavin, who Fisher specifically singled out this week as a guy that really they should get on the field more. And you could kind of hear Fisher feeling like they should have gotten him on the field more against Charleston Southern, which they really didn't against Charleston Southern. And that's a guy that I've been told is by far, I mean, it's become clear over the first few weeks of practice, he's by far the most talented receiver on the roster, and they need to get him on the field. They need to get him some reps. In any game where they get some space, they need to start putting him on the field. That said, what matters is not really size. What matters at wide receiver, and I think this is misconstrued a lot, and I'll spend a little bit more time on this in a future podcast, but what matters from the receiver position is not size, it's space. You have to create space. You have to create separation. Now, size makes it easier to create separation, but it doesn't make it automatic. The thing that you have with size, if you got a 6'4 guy, you've got instant separation going up. And there's, to some degree, a little bit more in terms of catch radius everywhere else, and you might be able to post up and create some separation that way. But keep in mind, two of the best wide receivers in the NFL right now are not big guys. Brown and Beckham are not big guys. And those guys are constantly open because they create space with their feet. You know, you could see that with Nooney, with Murray at Florida State. You know, Nooney Murray, he's a guy that is more in that kind of mold where he's going to create space with his feet. And that's what Florida State has more of with the wide receivers. Where that changes a little bit more is, again, in the red zone, where, again, it's harder to create separation or space anywhere. And that's where, if you can go up, it does definitely help. Now, the downfield vertical threat does, Florida State's going to need to do more with that. And clearly, Francois can throw it. They're just going to need to do more with that as they move forward. Defensively, the defensive line has been very good. Matthew Thomas has looked alternately excellent and a little rusty. And then the secondary, you know, this is where the real concern is right now with Derwin James out for the next 5 to 7 weeks, which I think is still a little optimistic given given a meniscus repair. The secondary has alternately looked great. They've looked fantastic when they've just decided to cover. But then they've also had way too many busts when they're doing various things in their match and in some of the zone stuff that they've done. And I think that's actually, you know, the same thing is true with the offensive line. I think for both the offensive line and the secondary, that's an early season symptom of all the cross training that they do. So in both places, in both the offensive line and in the secondary, there's a lot of cross training that happens where you have guys that are lining up at multiple positions. So you might have a guy at field corner, at boundary corner, at star, and at safety, and they're taking reps at all of those over the course of the preseason. And that's great because then, you know, if you do have a Derwin James go down, you've got multiple guys that you can plug and play in that spot. But at the same point, you lose a little bit in terms of the continuity that you need and the communication that you need to be rock solid, particularly early in the season before everybody kind of gets into the flow of being able to work together. And I think that that's been sort of the early season symptom. And that's a really dangerous thing going into what we're now going to preview for the rest of the podcast, and that's the Louisville game. And obviously the talking point, the main thing that everybody's talking about right now with the Louisville game is Lamar Jackson. He's the guy that you know all the eyes are going to be on in the Louisville game. And, you know, the question is, can Florida State's defense limit him enough to allow the Florida State offense with Dalvin Cook and then with a still green DeAndre Francois to do enough to win that game? That's really the question. And they cannot, you know, the defense can't have the kind of busts that they had against Ole Miss and the kind of they had a couple busts against Charleston Southern. That's how Charleston Southern scored. You can't have those busts against that Louisville offense, which is, in many respects, every bit as good, maybe better than that Ole Miss offense. I mean, Jackson is a Michael Vick kind of threat. I mean, you can argue that he is the most dangerous true dual threat quarterback since Michael Vick. Most dangerous running quarterback of that group, at least. Most dangerous with his feet of the dual threat quarterback since Michael Vick. I think you can make that argument. So that's where I think the key to this week for Florida State is to follow Thoreau. Simplify. Just simplify. Simplify, simplify, and just make sure that you take great angles and you're able to win on the interior and play inside out. That's what you're gonna have to do in order to have success in slowing down what Louisville's doing offensively. Otherwise, if you get the kind of bust that we've seen the first couple weeks, this could be a really, really tricky game for Florida State. Funny thing is that, you know, if you're Charles Kelly, you know, one of the things that a lot of fans have gotten, you know, have criticized Charles Kelly for over the last couple of years has been, oh, you know, he doesn't bring pressure often enough. Well, this is a game where, once again, the best option seems to be to simplify. Don't bring too many complex pressure packages and so on. And you've got to rely on your front four to get pressure. You've got to be able to get the defensive ends to be able to compress the pocket and keep contained without opening up too big of lanes inside for Lamar Jackson to get upfield. So, you know, this is where basically Florida State has to win up front, create pressure and compress the pocket and make Jackson uncomfortable up front without opening too much downfield, because they do have wide receivers. They do have players that can threaten Florida State in those seams, especially without Derwin James. And that's where this game gets really interesting. And, you know, they have the backs. I mean, Brandon Radcliffe is a good player. He's not an explosive player, but you don't need an explosive player back there when you have Lamar Jackson. You know, he's a bowling ball, and that's going to be one of the keys for Louisville is being able to run the football with the running back and keep Florida State honest, getting 4 or 5 yards a pop here and there with Radcliffe in between the tackles, and doing some of the inverted veer type stuff that they do Can they get him on the edge and force Florida State's defensive ends and edge players to play honest and potentially spring Lamar Jackson going forward? And actually, that's one of the things that if you're Florida State, you have to be really careful about, because, you know, I've compared Jackson to Michael Vick, and that's a comparison that, you know, I'm not the only one making that comparison at this point, but, you know, one of the differences between Vick and Jackson is Vick was had a lot more wiggle. I mean, he could do more laterally than Jackson. Jackson's much more of a linear guy, but the thing is, he's terrifying because one or two steps and he's gone. I mean, he's at full speed and he's past you. You can't let him get moving forward in one direction. You've got to make him go sideways and do something lateral in order to limit him. And last year, Florida State was able to do a lot of that, particularly shadowing him with Derwin James. This year, I think what they've really got to do is, as I said, the smart thing is to play to their length, play to their size, bring four, sometimes bring three and spy him with a Matthew Thomas, say, or a Trey Marshall, maybe. Again, depending on what defensive personnel you have on the field, you spy him with three or four rushers, try to keep him contained and make sure that you have guys with their eyes on him. And make sure that he can't just take off up a seam, because that's really the biggest threat. And then beyond that, you know, Bobby Petrino does a great job scheming guys open on vertical routes. He has a real understanding of how to put safeties in a bind in terms of pattern reading and the way that secondaries read coverages and or read routes, route combinations and all that, and getting guys open downfield. The best thing Florida State can do in the secondary is simplify to make sure that that those guys know where they're supposed to be. And really, you know, Petrino does a lot of shallow cross type stuff as well, you know, a lot of action in that horizontal space. To me, if you're Florida State, you want to try to go ahead and let them have a little bit of that stuff and let those receivers get beat up a little bit. Force Jackson to be accurate and patient in that underneath area and prevent him from creating big plays with his feet or having the space to throw those verticals downfield. I think that's your best play, and then play them for your size and your length in the red zone if it comes down to it. And ideally, you can get some tipped balls. You can, you know, maybe his accuracy on some of the underneath stuff isn't quite there, and you can create some turnovers and get some plays off the field. And again, this is the kind of game where putting DeMarcus Walker inside, particularly on third downs and that sort of thing, is the idea is a good option, because you're going to be able to ideally have him win his matchups against a guard or a center without necessarily opening up big seams, and that's going to be really important. Now, Florida State's defensive tackles are critical in this game. Naughty and Christmas and Fred Jones and Ime, who, you know, Ime's still kind of getting up to speed, but those guys have to be outstanding on the interior to be able to stop Radcliffe and stop the running game more or less without a whole lot of help, and to keep Jackson from having those lanes upfield. The lane integrity in the rush is going to be so critical this week to prevent Jackson from just being able to take off upfield with you know, no resistance. You can't get behind him. You have to play in front of him as a rusher. And if you beat your guy, you've got to make sure that you don't beat him by so much that you open that lane so that Jackson can escape. That's the real threat defensively. And offensively, I think really, I mean, again, Florida State, the interesting thing here is this defense in some ways is the opposite of Ole Miss. In terms of Ole Miss, you wanted to go a little heavy, keep more linebackers on the field and try to set up some play action, because, you know, they're going to have to commit to stop the run, but basically honor their outstanding defensive line and try to do some things with play action and get to cook. In terms of personnel, I think it's very different. I think you want to try to spread Louisville out a little bit more, force them to go five and six defensive backs to defend you, and then run Dalvin Cook on some of that interior stuff, you know, your inside outside zone and your power stuff out of those kinds of packages. So I think this is a 3 and 4 wide receiver week, mostly, you know, 11 personnel this week is what you're going to see. I mean, Freddie Stevenson is I think questionable for this game. I haven't seen, I'm not sure if he's on the final injury report. And again, Florida State's injury reports are consistently unreliable these days. But yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of 11 personnel with Izzo at the tight end position, and then trying to get three wide receivers out there that can challenge downfield in order to give Louisville, in order to force Louisville into some nickel packages so that they can open up the running game a little bit. If they don't match with nickel packages, then you play action that and you continue to try to get some separation down the field. If they match up with nickel packages, then you try to run Dalvin Cook and let him have the success that he's had against Louisville the first 2 years of his career. And again, I think it's important to get Dalvin Cook on the edge and get him some opportunities in the passing game as well. And I think that's going to be, you know, important through the first half of this year as teams continue to try to take him away as the primary option, to show that, you know, they're going to have to honor what FSU is doing on the outside, and they can't just try to clog the seams to keep him from getting big plays in the running game. So, you know, I think for Florida State, it's, again, be patient, go 11 personnel a lot, which may be harder. I mean, Nooney Murray is questionable, I think, for this game. He was in a boot earlier in the week. I think Pig Harrison actually may be out for the game. So that, you know, those are two guys that you want to have out there, but there's still four receivers that you trust. The three senior receivers and then, or the two senior receivers, Rudolph, and then you can stick, Alden Tate out there. And then that, you know, you've got your fifth guy with Ermin Lane. I think you put Tate out there as a third guy in a number of cases to get both a guy that can block with some size and challenge some things in the vertical space, as a bigger receiver. I think you go with that 11 personnel and you really try to lean on Dalvin Cook and you lean on the quarterback run game in this game. You know, let DeAndre Francois' legs actually be the story of the game, as Louisville has to handle him on boots and that sort of thing. While everybody's coming in talking about Lamar Jackson's legs, let your quarterback loose in terms of the running game there as well. So I think there's just a lot of interesting matchups in this game. It's going to be very interesting to see really how good these two teams are. I mean, I think there's some questions still on both sides. Florida State obviously has a number of injury questions and personnel questions at this point in the season that this game's going to sort of reveal. And I think a lot of that's going to have to do with what the final outcome of this game is. Coming into the season, I thought this was probably Florida State's most dangerous game. I thought actually it was probably a more likely loss coming into the season even than the Clemson game was. And at this point, that still may be true. The more I've looked at the matchup, the more I think Florida State really should win this game, even with the injury to Derwin James, even with some of the other guys that may miss. And actually right now, as I record this, there's still some rumors that one other very important defensive starter may have, may have been some injury issue there that hasn't been let out yet by Florida State. But I don't know whether that's the case or not. I haven't been able to verify anything at this point, but even if that's the case, I think that Florida State is the deeper and overall more talented team is the team that should win the battle in the trenches, particularly if both Wilson Bell and Kareem R play this game. I think Florida State should win in the trenches, and that makes life a lot easier for a guy like DeAndre Francois in his first true road start if you're winning in the trenches and you have Dalvin Cook behind you. And beyond that, I think Florida State's going to have some trouble on defense containing a very good offense. And, everybody knows Bobby Petrino can coach offense now. And he's got the players to really stress Florida State's defense. I think Florida State will give up some points. I think you're going to see this game be a very competitive game and a hard-hitting game. But I do think Florida State winds up pulling away late. I think depth and the ability to run the football reliably, not just with Dalvin Cook, but with Jaquez Patrick, who's come on late of late as well, be able to not just run for a few big plays, which I expect, you know, I expect Jackson's going to get a few of those plays. I don't know that he's going to go for, you know, 70, 80 yards multiple times in this game, but he's going to create some big plays. I think in the end of the day, though, Florida State's ability to run consistently and win the matchup up front is ultimately going to be the difference in this game. So I've got Florida State winning 41-31. As you can see, I think there's going to be a lot of points scored. I think both defenses are going to have their ups and downs. I think for Louisville to win this game, they're probably going to need a turnover to be plus probably two in the turnover margin, or have a big special teams play go their way. I think Florida State ultimately ends up having the edge in the return game. This game probably ends up about even in turnovers. So that's where I'm presuming it. I think FSU walks away roughly 41-31 final score. Should be a fun one, with yet another game matching up two outstanding quarterbacks in the ACC. In a game that is really going to say a lot about where both of these teams stand in the national picture, and where these teams have actual strengths and weaknesses. I think the picture is going to become a lot clearer after this week. Well, that's going to do it for us here on the Unconquered Podcast for one more episode. Again, if you've enjoyed this podcast, please rate us on iTunes, leave us a 5-star review, and also, you know, subscribe via iTunes or other podcast managers. That'll definitely help us moving forward as we try to seal up some sponsorship deals and other things to allow this podcast to be recorded a little bit more frequently and to have a little bit more in the way of resources. Again, those subscriptions and 5-star reviews help us out a lot. So thanks a lot for those of you who've done that. This has been the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Doc Staples. Thanks for listening. I made this.